I did it just a year and a half ago. So what I want to talk about today is my experience on the El Camino and a lot of the things I was reminded about that are important in life and lessons I learned and sacred journeys in general. Before I talk about the El Camino, I'm going to talk about a three-day silent retreat I took, which was very powerful, and it was local. So what I really hope you walk away with today is just a sense that sacred journeying is available to anybody, no matter where you live, your state of health, your age. It has no matter, because really what it is, it's an inward journey, and it can be an outward journey. It could be both combined, or it could just be an inward journey. And there's many ways you could do it in a small, very small piece, in 5 minutes, or in a year with Eat, Pray, Love that we were talking about earlier. So just start thinking about how you can add more connection and presence with the divine in anything you do, especially in any kind of trip or walk or journey you take. Okay. So when I heard that prayer, I'm thinking, no vices. I would never have been on the Camino if that were the case with me. I have vices, and I love the vices I have. The one I'm most attached to is coffee, which I don't really look at as a vice. What's that? Oh, I had coffee every morning.
Okay, good.
Coffee was really good over there.
Scared me.
And what is your name, sir?
Richard,
okay. So the title of today's talk is Sacred Journeys. Break the comfort of your routine and open to the presence of the divine. Taking time out to press the pause and reset buttons in your life can give you a fresh perspective and also some unexpected gifts. And today, again, I'm going to share wisdom that I gleaned from a local three-day retreat, which was at the Mountain Retreat Center in Highlands, and then wisdom gained from 9 weeks away, 6.5 weeks walking the El Camino de Santiago in 2014. The Zen master poured his visitor's teacup full and then kept pouring. The visitor watched until he could no longer restrain himself. "It is over full. No more will go in." The Zen master nodded and calmly explained, "You are here to ask questions, yet you come full. You have your own ideas and have no space. Until you have room for more, you will not accept new information." In October 2010, I was at the point of this visitor and felt just like this overflowing teacup. Too much information and busyness over several months and probably years had left me feeling overwhelmed. So I decided to take a solo silent retreat at the Mountain Retreat Center in Highlands. I booked a cabin there for 3 nights. I left on a Sunday morning and came back Wednesday evening. I took my food because there was no cook on the premises and just a skeleton crew. I got a badge that said "In Silence." I rented a cabin, and for 3.5 days, my intention was to empty myself out. So that meant no cell phones, no computers, no reading, no books, only journal minimally, because I didn't want to get caught up in all my head stuff. No taking in new information. And so I brought some colored markers and poster board to draw. I'd get up early as the sun rose, make coffee, watch the sun rise over behind the mountains, meditate, literally lay down on the bench they had and stare at the clouds for hours. I went for walks, and it was fascinating because I thought I might be bored. I thought, how am I going to make it 3.5 days without talking? And I was amazed at how easy it was. And not only that, it allowed me to really empty out and access this deep center, this place of peace that we all have within us. And what's even better is the gift keeps on giving, because even today, as I'm sharing this, and anytime I think about it, I can bring myself right back there and see those mountains and see the sky and connect right away with that peace. So that was 3.5 days. It probably cost me $170, maybe $200. So the impact was huge. Now, 4 years later, on September 11, 2014, I took a very different time out and began the 500-mile walk of the El Camino de Santiago, or Way of St. James. I started thinking about taking a trip because I was bored, and the weather was very cold with lots of snow that January. And I wanted to do something I could get excited about, and I wanted to do something to get me out of my comfort zone, get me out of my routine, and really press the pause and reset buttons on my life to do something different I'd never done before, something that contained the things I really value, authentic, deep connections with people, people from all over the world of different faiths and traditions, being in nature, physical exercise, different food, trying different food, drinking wine, travel. So what started out from boredom became a call from spirit, where all these synchronicities and serendipitous events orchestrated, and it showed me, wow, I'm meant to do this walk, and I'm meant to do it this year. So I made the decision around February of 2014, and then I started the preparation. And half the fun was the anticipation of the trip and getting ready for it. And with any sacred journey, I think the sacred journey really starts at the moment of commitment. When you're committed and you said, okay, I'm doing this, that's when the journey really starts. And that was the case for me. So before I walked the Camino, my intentions included having a new adventure, getting out of my comfort zone, changing the story that I'm a light sleeper, because it's always been very hard for me to sleep in a room with other people, especially snorers. And I knew I'd be in a hostel room most nights with anywhere from 5 to 30 people, challenging myself physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, becoming closer to God, connecting with the divine through the walking, and then living life more fully through expressing the values I already mentioned. And my intention also was to do the walk in a spirit of surrender, trust, and gratitude, and really letting myself be open to whatever happened, trusting it would be for my highest and best good, whether I could see it in the moment or not. So when I made these intentions, they seemed very kind of noble and reasonable and doable, and I made these intentions from the comfort of my home in Asheville. And the challenges came later when I was actually on the walk, as you probably can attest, Richard, when I was tired and hot and thirsty. And then, especially when I got this stomach bug that lasted about 9 days, where I had waves of nausea in and out of the day. So I was also reminded that what they say about the best laid plans came true. So because when I started the Camino, I also intended to say yes to everything I could and be very spontaneous and open. And it really worked well for the first two-thirds of the trip. My body felt great. I had no blisters or pulled muscles. And I was riding high. I felt physically strong and energized, and I loved most days. I was connecting. I was in community. There was a rhythm to the day that was very nourishing, even though the content of each day was different because the scenery would change. We'd stay at different hostels. The rhythm was very similar, and there was a real comfort in this rhythm. Now, I was also very grateful at this time. However, I noticed as the weeks wore on, I became sloppier with my thinking. And we all believe that our thoughts affect our reality, right? And so I allowed the small complaints I had about different things, like the lack of variety with the food, rude comments from a few people, or discomfort at some of the hostels, to grow. Until I woke up one morning in the city of León feeling really nauseous and then having the nausea continue for another 8 or 9 days while I was still trying to walk. So this was very humbling. And it was very strange because I'd never experienced anything like that before in my life. Until I got sick, most nights I stayed at a hostel or albergue with other pilgrims. So we usually slept in bunk beds with anywhere from 5 to 30 people to a room. Lights went out around 10, and people would start getting up around 6, have a light breakfast or coffee, and then start walking around 7, 7:30. And the morning time I found challenging because there were a lot of people crammed around maybe 3 sinks in the bathroom and 3 stalls, and I'd hit my head on the upper bunk above me, and I felt claustrophobic. But once I opened the door and breathed in the fresh September, October air, and it was in the 50s, I thought, oh, this is nice. And I had my little headlamp so I could see. It was usually dark, especially in October. And then it was very peaceful and blissful in the morning because I'd be walking west and the sun would be rising behind me. So the sky would gradually get lighter. And I committed to walking the first hour on my own so I could really be more in a contemplative, prayerful state and then allow outside energy to come in. So that was a really magical time. The other thing that was one of the highlights was walking for a couple of hours and then stopping for breakfast. And that was a wonderful time of communing with the other pilgrims, eating at an outdoor cafe with a cafe con leche, which is a coffee with cream or milk, and a chocolate croissant or tortilla, which is egg and potato, or ham and cheese sandwich. And so the food, I realized, wow, food tastes even better when you're outside and you've really had to work for that food and you've walked several miles. So these were some of my favorite times of day. Then I'd usually arrive at the hostel I was staying at anywhere between 1:30 and 3 because I determined I wasn't one of these marathon walkers trying to get from point A to point B as fast as possible. I also was very committed to enjoying the journey. And so as a result, I walk more slowly than most of the other pilgrims. And a lot of them, which was kind of sad sometimes because I'd get in a great conversation with people and they'd say, well, I'm going to move a little faster, so nice talking to you. And then they'd pass by. But that was okay. And I learned that about walking about 5 or 6 hours a day was perfect. It was a perfect amount of exercise. So I'd stop in the afternoon. The pilgrims, we'd all check in, pick a bed, wash our dirty clothes, take a quick shower, and then I would journal and chat with the other pilgrims, and then we'd have a pilgrim meal around 6 or 7, which usually consisted of bread, wine or water, a salad or soup, and then a meat and potato usually, and then some kind of dessert like an apple or yogurt or ice cream. So it was very filling, and I had a ravenous appetite, which I burned off easily, which was even better because I love to eat. And you were the one who mentioned the food thing, so I relate to that. So it was really wonderful, and then I normally go to bed early anyway, so it was great that the lights went out at 10. And so it was nice. There was a perfect combination of walking with people and communing with people and walking on my own. But when I got sick, I realized, oh my gosh, instead of my objective being to say yes to everything, it became, all right, I want to finish the Camino and I need rest. Because I'm not getting a lot of energy from food because I can barely eat. I had these waves of nausea in and out of the day where sometimes I thought I was really going to lose it. And I thought, well, if I lie down and stay in a bed, I'm going to be just as nauseous or more nauseous than if I walk in the fresh air. So I'm going to just keep walking. And if I have to stop after 5 miles instead of 15 miles, so be it. But I started feeling really lonely because now I was staying in a room by myself because I was thinking I needed to get even more sleep, and I kept thinking I was going to throw up at any moment, which actually never happened. I felt very lonely and isolating. But even during these times, I met people who were very kind and helped to take care of me. So I'm going to share with you some of the special gifts I learned and the reminders I had from the Camino. Now, first of all, I want to know how many of you are Seinfeld people? Like addicts, like you know, if you hear a line, you know what it is. How many? Raise your hands. 3, 4? Okay, not that many. All right, there's a great, what's that? You like it. There were a lot of Seinfeld metaphors. Just for fun, I have to share one of them. Some of you may know it. The addicts in the room will. So on the Camino, the image that came to me was the scene where Elaine was writing for the Peterman catalog. And she had writer's block, and she's walking down a sidewalk in New York City late at night. And here's Elaine. Oh, I'm exhausted. I've been on the street 1,000 times. It's never looked so strange. The faces, so cold. In the distance, a child is crying. Fatherless, a bastard child perhaps. My back aches, my heart aches, but my feet are resilient. Thank God I took off my shoes and put on my Himalayan walking shoes. Yes! So that came to me, all these different Seinfeld, being the addict that I am. I was reminded of how important it is to not judge ourselves or judge others. I had an experience where I was staying at a hostel and had just put my stuff on the bed, and this guy had come in that I found annoying that I had met earlier, and he put his stuff on his bed, but his water bladder, which is what you put in the backpack and there's a long hose that comes out, he put it on the floor and the water started leaking out. So I made him aware of this, not unkindly, but I could have been more warmer. And then later I'm downstairs and I made a huge salad and I thought, wow, I have more salad to share with somebody else. And I thought, maybe I'll ask one of the hospitaleras, the women who host the pilgrims. And I asked her and she declined because she was making paella. And then a voice in my head said, Barbara, you know who you need to ask. And I thought, I knew it was the voice of spirit, and I said, all right, only if he's downstairs, only if he's in easy range, easy view. I didn't even know the guy's name. So I poked my head out into the dining area, and there's one person sitting at the dining table, and it's him, eating sardines and bread. And I thought, oh, wow, salad would go really nicely with that. So I asked him if he'd like to join me. I told him I had extra salad, and he seemed pleased. And so I thought to myself, okay, Barbara, you love your father. Treat him as if he were your dad or how you'd want somebody to treat your dad. So I thought, okay, be kind, be nice, be open. And I got to know him, and he was really fascinating. He was a businessman who had been very successful from Poland, who had retired and took the name Anatosh, which means content in the moment, because he was tired of striving. And it was so humbling, and I felt shame, and I felt really humble because it showed me, wow, how, you know, it made me wonder and question how many times do my judgments keep me from knowing really cool people? And how often is it that it's just easy to put somebody in a category right away and not take the time to get to know them? So that was a very powerful learning. I was also reminded that I don't need much to be happy. In the prayer you read, there was something about a simple life. And I totally agree with that because the things that make me happy are so simple. They're looking at shafts of sunlight through the trees, listening to birds chirp, hearing some great music on the radio, a hot, strong cup of coffee, the smell of popcorn, and on the Camino, the sound of cowbells, hearing the cows moo, hearing the whoosh of bicycles as they pass us by with the pilgrims on bikes, the kindness of strangers, just sitting with others over a lengthy meal that's more than one course, and it's eaten in a longer time than 15 minutes like we tend to do here. The next thing that I really learned, because it wasn't something I was reminded of, was how important it is to allow others to help me and not be so self-reliant. This culture values self-reliance, but there's a cost. Isolation, loneliness. And about a week into the walk, I was staying in Pamplona and broke down crying in my hotel room. That was my first little breakdown. And I later told another pilgrim that I was glad I was alone when I was crying and upset. And she said, why? We're here to take care of each other, and you should let others take care of you. And I hadn't thought of it that way. I thought, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want people to feel bad or feel like they have to take care of me. Then halfway through the walk, I got bed bugs, which was very interesting. And it was actually a really cool thing because it was halfway through the walk. I had only washed a few items out of my clothes, and I found this hostel. It wasn't even in the guide. It was a new hostel run by these two guys. Again, Seinfeld metaphor. They were like the street toughs who stole Elaine's armoire. Their names were Pablo and Alvaro. and like the Puerto Rican street toughs on Seinfeld. So, but they were so kind, they told me, you have bed bugs. If you want to stay here, you have to do exactly what we say. And they kept apologizing. They said, we're so sorry. You're going to have this room here. You're going to have to stay there by yourself. You're going to have to shower in this private bathroom. We're so sorry you have to do this. You have to give us all your clothes, and we're going to wash them for you. We're so sorry. I'm thinking, oh, it's halfway through the Camino, and they're washing all my clothes for free. This is fantastic. I wouldn't even know how to wash the clothes, never mind getting bed bugs out of them. So, and then they go up to the vending machine, and they ask, do you like beer? And I said, yes. They unlocked the vending machine, took out a beer, and gave it to me for free. I mean, it was just fantastic. So I felt like these were angels, these hostel guys. And then later on, when I got the nausea bug, I met two pilgrims from Asheville who gave me probiotics. I met somebody who shared tea with me and helped me get food across the street. Other people translating for me. Numerous instances of kindness. I learned I'm happier when I let go of expectations. That's a big trip up for most of us. One morning, I was craving a tortilla. This is towards the beginning of the trip. And so I went to four cafes in a large town. I was determined to get a friggin' tortilla. I didn't want a croissant. I wanted a tortilla. And it took me four cafes. I ended up missing a connection with a good friend. And I was feeling really frustrated. And I finally got the tortilla, but, you know, was it really worth it? Was it that important? The next thing which goes along with this is to let go of preconceived ideas of what things should be and accept, embrace, and be grateful for what we're given. I was given continual reminders to accept things as they were and not expect or wish they were different. Whether it was getting a cold hot chocolate from the vending machine when I pushed hot black coffee, when it was getting mostly a meat and potato salad that was advertised as a veggie salad, or allowing a really loud blaring TV at one of the hostels to trigger me so that I muted it, which resulted in one of the workers there yelling at me. I was reminded that I love and need to be in community and how blessed I am to have the one in Asheville. And it was a pleasant kind of surprise how I loved the 20-somethings, the millennials. I really connected very nicely with these 20-somethings and early people in their early 30s. And that was a really sweet thing to experience. I learned what comes around goes around. I share wine with a stranger one night. A stranger shares wine with me the next night. I share some of my food. Somebody else shares food with me. I learned the world is small. I met at least four people who'd been to Asheville and two people who lived here, including the hotel clerk who checked me in at the Hilton in Madrid by the airport. I told him I'd been on the Camino. He said, oh, I lived in Rutherfordton, and I went to Mellow Mushroom in Asheville a lot. I was going to school over there. I was really humbled and had so much compassion because I met so many people who were going through struggles. The Camino tends to attract people in transition. They call it the divorcee trail for the Europeans, actually. I've met people who lost their jobs, people who'd survived cancer or just been diagnosed with cancer or re-diagnosed with cancer, a woman with celiac disease, people with broken hearts from relationship endings, and people who'd lost loved ones recently. So a lot of grief on the Camino, people walking out their grief. And then, of course, the direct experience of how my thoughts affect my reality. When I got the nausea and I couldn't get rid of it for so long, I started doing some research. Louise Hay, nausea, I looked it up online. And she says, nausea is caused by a fear or a rejecting of an idea or experience, not accepting a situation, being discontented, disappointed, unsatisfied, or afraid of something new. And in tracking through my journal, I realized in the 2 to 3 days before I got sick, I was really in resistance and negativity and complaining. So I can see how I left myself just ripe for that experience. And Louise's antidotes were affirmations I started saying to myself. I am safe. I trust the process of life to bring me only good. I am content. I am tranquil. I am satisfied. And eventually it worked its way out. So along with these affirmations was a reminder of the whole mind-body-spirit connection and the importance of listening to my body. So because this was a nausea thing and a stomach bug, I asked my stomach what it wanted, what it was trying to tell me, what its message was. And the first thing I heard was, I'm tired of the same food, and I want more variety, and to know that I'm safe. So I said, okay, how about if we don't like the pilgrim meal, we go to the grocery store? And the stomach said, okay, that sounds good. And then I asked, what else? And my stomach said, I'm afraid nothing is going to change in our life after the Camino. And I'm like, So I said, well, we need to trust the process of life to bring us only good. And just like being on the Camino, we can never know what's just around the corner. But we have to trust that we'll be taken care of, that it will be good, and focus on the present. And as long as we are in alignment each and every moment as much as possible, we're going to be on the best path for us eventually. And I did some cathartic crying, and then with these three things, I started feeling better. So it was a multi-pronged approach. And then, finally, I learned the most powerful piece, that the meaning of love is much bigger than what most people think of as love, with romantic love. And I was given the message from Spirit that one of my reasons for being on the Camino is to really get this bigger meaning of love and to live the bigger meaning of life, meaning of love, every day. So on Halloween, it was 5 days after I finished the Camino, I entered a question in my journal. Spirit, why did you call me to go on this Camino? And Spirit responded, to get back to basics and remember what's most important in life. Connection to self, others, nature, God, Spirit, being in your body and appreciating the beauty and love God put on earth in all its forms. The sunrise, tortilla, pilgrim next to you, hospitalera, vino rioja, tomato, fig, branch, bird, cow. So you can go forward more easily and freely, being able to release what's superfluous and create more space for these things that are most important. To feel a balance of aloneness and togetherness, affirming you need both. To give you a broader perspective, to provide a vehicle through which you teach people how to live life fully, through example, the most powerful way to teach, including that the most important thing is to remember we're all love, connected in love, immersed in a soup of love, and here to love big and unconditionally. You experience this love on the Camino. It's the illusion that love's about that special, unique partner that can keep us from recognizing what love really is, and from loving each other fully and completely. You got to experience yourself as love, giving and receiving love with many. This trip was to help you see what gets in the way of your awareness of love's eternal presence, judgments, complaints, negativity, and what helps you experience and be aware of it. Gratitude, surrender, acceptance, and trust, with gratitude being more the most important, the most powerful. So, now, I ask each of you to just reflect within yourself and to just check in and see if you are feeling any urges or call to go on your own sacred journey. And if so, what kind of journey would feel best? And what would be something different from anything you've done before? Remember that any journey, inner or outer, is sacred just by your intention for it to be so. And it doesn't matter about the length or where it is. So to see what might have juice for you, I want to just start opening up the imagination for dwelling in possibilities. So I'm going to ask you to get comfortable in your seat and take a few deep breaths and close your eyes. And just let any thoughts that might float by, that might come up, float by like clouds, knowing you can come back to them later. And I'm going to read through some possibilities for a sacred journey, pausing between each idea. And as I read each idea, just see what comes up in your body. See what feels like a yes in your body and heart. A year off, as Elizabeth Gilbert did in Eat, Pray, Love, living in three different locations around the world for 4 months each. Two to 6 months off to hike the Appalachian Trail. An 8-week class in clay, drawing, painting, or glass blowing at Penland School of Crafts in North Carolina. A 2-week spiritual pilgrimage in Jerusalem. A 10-day tour to visit John of God, a healer in Brazil. A 7-day writing retreat in New Mexico or Ireland. A five-day retreat at the Mira Baba Center in Myrtle Beach. A 3-day retreat at the Southern Dharma Center in Hot Springs. A day of self-care at the Grove Park Spa in Asheville. Two hours in silence, savoring a healthy breakfast at an outdoor cafe. A 90-minute yoga class. A half-hour stroll along the Little Tennessee River Greenway here. Or 2 minutes of silent meditation with eyes closed in the morning. So I hope you've enjoyed this virtual journey of possibilities. And when you're ready, open your eyes. And I wish you all many more sacred journeys than the ones you've already taken.